How's my hair, James?
It's looking good. It's looking good. I need a haircut. Slick. It's slick. Oh. It's slick. I might go to the hairdresser and ask for the Allen.
Let's go for the Husky then.
That's it. Husky. Talking to Husky, we're here talking about the new Husqvarna Norden 901 Expedition. Now, Allen, you're the founder of ABR. You're the founder of the festival. You run Adventurize day to day as a business. So you don't get to go on bike launches anywhere near as much as you used to. So why did you decide to go on the Husqvarna one? Did the location play a role?
Well, the first thing is, thank you for pointing out the sort of purgatory of my work these days, James. But there was a couple of things that happened, if you remember. There was a couple of our regular bike testers were otherwise engaged. Well, I say one of them in South America, having a great time. But the location happened to be South Africa, and I thought, these are the times when I should be pulling rank. Because to have the opportunity to fly to South Africa to ride a new bike in conditions which I know very well, South Africa is perfect for adventure riding. I felt, why am I running this business if I can't take this? So, 4 days in South Africa, as a guest and at the expense of Husqvarna. I'm not going to turn that down, James.
I remember my heart falling a little bit when I was in your office saying, Alan, South Africa trips on the cars, did you fancy it?
Yeah, I did notice the disappointment there, James. But like I say, it's South Africa, I had to go. It was, I wanted to ride this bike, but I also wanted to ride it in that sort of location because as an adventure bike, in the UK and Europe, we don't really have the opportunity to ride these bikes for what the manufacturers would have you believe they can do. So going to South Africa and knowing the conditions there, that's what you can go. You can certainly do adventure riding there, which will, the video and what I'm going to tell you about it proves.
That's it. We'll get onto the launch and so forth in a minute. But to begin with, what's the deal with the Norden 901 Expedition? Because it's only been a year or so since the original Norden was launched, wasn't it? So why this new model now?
I think, it's the same with all manufacturers now. They need to keep up every year. You can't release a bike and sort of just leave it there for about 5 years and all people like it. For all reasons, marketing reasons, just to keep the excitement, the bike in the headlines, you've got to do something with it. So it's not unusual to see this. So what has Husqvarna done with the Expedition over and above the standard Norden was they put a taller screen on there, which it definitely needed.
Thank goodness for that.
That little carbuncle on the standard one just did nothing. They've also put upgraded suspension on there. They've added 20 millimeters of travel front and at the rear. They've also increased the diameter of the forks by 5 millimeters as well. So you've got an upgraded suspension there, which is going to be better for off-road. On top of that, and here's a controversial one, they've given a heated front seat. Ooh. Now, I can see my wife smiling
but
already.
No.
I can see her smiling already when I say, I've got a heated seat, but your throne on the back is going to be cold. She's going to love that. I think Husqvarna have, they're going to create a few arguments here with that one. But anyway, you've got a heated rider's seat. You've got heated grips. You've got the bash plate is beefed up. You've got a center stand. And you've got, which was a strange one, bear in mind the bike is called the Expedition, you've got an extra riding mode called the Explorer. Now, why they didn't call it it would have made this a lot easier, only one word to remember. But the Explorer mode is totally configurable. You can put in sharper power delivery, you can change the traction control, the whole lot. Everything is customizable to the rider. So that's what you get for your money. All in all, I guess if you were to retrofit all these to the standard Norden, you'd be looking at $2,000+.
Yeah.
But the Expedition is only £900 more than the standard. So it's a good deal.
And it's $13,599, isn't it? The bike in total, which sounds pretty good value for everything you're getting there.
There's no doubt in my mind. If I was going for a Norden, it would be the Expedition. And, you know, for two reasons. One, I want those extras. Two, I think for resale value, I think people are going to be looking for those items on there as well. So every reason to buy the Expedition, and I can't think why I'd buy the stock Norden now. So
now, one thing I was looking forward to hearing about was what you thought about the bike's looks. Because the Norden, there's no getting away from it. It's a Marmite bike, isn't it? You know, some people adore the looks, and I'm a huge fan. I think it looks fresh in a retro way. Other people really didn't get on board with it. But I know you've been won over, I think, haven't you?
I have been won over. I remember when you know, we all had first sight that Norden, and in fairness to you, James, you sort of swooned at the knees.
I did, yeah.
Immediately, whereas I couldn't see anything other than that big single headlight. You know, and once you've seen it, you can't ignore it, sort of thing. So, I've always liked the Husky colour scheme, yeah. the blue, yellow, white. I just like that.
Huskies are cool bikes, aren't they? They're just cool.
They're cool. And the Norden has grown on me. And, you know, I actually like the look of the bike now. And just subtle little things where that bigger screen on it seems to have balanced out the headlight in the looks department. And all in all, I look at it and I think, I actually like this, you know. So I'm a fan of the slightly retro looks and definitely a fan of the colour scheme. So, you know, yes, I'm won over by the looks of the Norden. It did take me a little while, but definitely won over by it now.
I'm expecting to see one in the ABR kind of toilet wall or something like that, just for us to gaze upon.
Or we could paint this room in Norden colours.
That's it, Norden colours.
Or Husqvarna colours.
Pretty cool, actually, yeah. Okay, so we'll go into detail about the bike and find out how it performed. But I'm interested to find out a little bit more about this launch, because, you know, bike launches tend to be in the likes of Spain or Italy. You know, they're short-haul flights. They're a day of riding, a little bit of off-road. We're back home right in our review. But now this was a bit of a mega launch all round, wasn't it? So tell about the, you know, flights there, what greeted you when you arrived and everything.
Okay. It's an 11-hour flight to South Africa. So we had an overnight flight. We were picked up at the Cape Town airport. We didn't really know what riding we were going to do. You can guess, just because you're in South Africa, what you're going to do. We were taken to the hotel, lovely hotel, I'd say about 30 miles from Cape Town. And the hotels have to be chosen so that they can store bikes as well. Yep. You know, you can't have 40 or 50 bikes outside in the front road or anything. So there's always a garage there where they can lock away the bikes and so on. But to come back to why are these press launches in Spain and Sardinia and so on, predominantly it's because press launches are in the early spring or winter and you need some light for photography. You know, make a bike look good.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's better than making a bike look bad in photographs. So it's predominantly done for that, plus the roads. You know, you've been on a few press trips, James. Could you imagine having a press trip, I don't know, from Birmingham to Grimsby or something, going up the M1? That would be, you know, in winter.
It would be miserable, I think. It would be the word. Rain, ice, snow.
Whereas riding a bike around the as soon as you get off the course in Spain, as you know, there's hardly any traffic on the roads. They build bends where there's, you know, if you can build a straight or a bend, the Spanish build a bend. You know, it's nothing to do with the contours of the earth.
They
it's
do biking do with, roads
yeah,
better absolutely. Than most, don't they? Yeah.
And South Africa gives you all that as well. We actually went in the summer, you know, so there was 30 degrees plus heat when we was out there. But coming back to when we arrived there, there was a couple of celebs there. There was Cyril Dupree, 5 times Dakar
Very
champion.
Cool.
And, you know, we got to learn immediately that Cyril was going to be riding with us and maybe even leading a ride, which, you know, when you got a Dakar, 5 times Dakar champion leading a ride, you know, it's going to be something special.
I think my nerves would have been tingling a little bit there. And then, what are we in for?
Exactly. And then we had this this guy, South African explorer called Mike Horn. And Mike, I know a little bit, as you know, we've got another side of the business, which is all about mountaineering and adventure travel. And I come across Mike in that, you know, Mike is the sort of guy that sort of walks to the North Pole alone in winter.
As you do. Well, why not? Yeah.
You know. So anyway, we were presented with a film of the Norden going across Mongolia. Mike and Cyril had teamed up to go across Mongolia. And you had Cyril riding the bike like a trials bike over huge boulders and up cliff faces and so on. And then you had Mike Horn setting up abseils to get the bike down vertical cliff faces, with Cyril still sitting on there, and with him presumably sitting on there.
He's a handy guy to have on board with you then.
Well, if you come across a cliff. Yeah, yeah. So that was getting me thinking, what are they going to, you know, are we abseiling off Cape Town, off Table Mountain or something? But, so anyway, the expectations were high. Then we were told that we'd be doing over 500 Ks in a two-day test ride.
That's a good distance for a test, isn't it?
It's a really good distance. You know, it's you know you're going to be testing all-day comfort for a couple of days, which is good because some launches can be, you know, by the time you've had photo shoots and you've had lunch and so on, you might only do a few hours riding, actually.
A lot of stop-start, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah. So this one, we were going to be doing a lot of mileage or kilometerage, if that's the right word. And then we were told, and over 300 kilometers of that is going to be off-road. Wow. Now, you know, I've been riding in South Africa and Namibia, which is fairly similar to South Africa in terrain, quite a number of times, and there's so many gravel dirt roads out there. You know, my initial sort of thought was, right, we're going to be doing over 300K on gravel, dirt, you know, those sort of roads. But that wasn't the case, James. That was not the case.
And that shows confidence, doesn't it, from Husqvarna? Because, you know, a lot of bike launches, the off-road sections can be very limited. Some are incredibly limited. So to give you 300 Ks off-road shows that Husqvarna's backing their bike, doesn't it?
Well, I think, yes. And I can't think of anything better to sort of emphasize that when we were sitting at the bottom of a climb, and this climb, when I looked up at it, it was steep, but it started off in soft sand. Then it went into a washout, which I could have lost the bike in if I'd got it wrong. Then there was boulders, which would test the skid blade. Then there was shale, and this sort of shale where it's so soft, it's a bit like sand, so you can get buried in this shale. And there was just rocks. It was serious. And I was looking at this thinking, I wish I was on a 250 KTM.
I bet you were. I bet you. Isn't it some course?
Yeah, rather than a 220 Ks, kilograms of adventure bike. But anyway, we managed to get the top this climb. There was debris all around. And by debris, I mean riders all around on the floor.
Arms flailing, legs in the air. Yeah.
Touch wood. I managed to get up there.
Good man.
And without coming off. And I was sitting at I just got off the bike at the top because it was hard work and I was sweating and I was, you know, this was wow. Got up there. And Cyril Dupree came over to me and he said, oh, well done on that. You know, he said, I can't believe they've made this circuit so difficult. This is no bullshit breast launch, is it? Now, for a 5-times Dakar champion to make that comment on what we'd just ridden on a, you know, what is essentially a big adventure bike, you know, I sort of thought, ooh, you can still do it, Al.
Yeah, well, I say, how are you feeling? Because you're ridden a lot off-road throughout the world, but you haven't done it for a while. Did you slip back into it? Did the bike help you slip back into it?
Well, I had a leg injury 3.5 years ago where I've now not got a pulse in my left leg. So, you know, if I have any trauma on that leg, there's a good chance that I might not have a leg after it because there's no pulse in there to help with it getting back in shape. So for the last 3.5 years, I've resisted riding off-road. Yeah. And I thought my days of off-road riding, I still ride on the road, but I thought my days of off-road riding are over. The, you know, the stakes are too high, really. But after 3.5 years, I thought, I enjoyed off-road riding. I want, you know, so the South Africa trip gave me the opportunity to do it again. But if I'd known how difficult it was going to be in advance, James, I wouldn't have gone. But, you know, to do what we've done out there on those bikes, and fair play to Husky for putting up a route like this, it totally energized me. I really, really got my mojo back and my love and desire for riding off-road bikes and riding bikes off-road. And, you know, what more can a bike do than give you that? You know, and so I came back from that trip really energized, really sort of, wow, you know, and at 63-year-old, being overweight, dodgy knees, and not a pulse in one leg, I didn't think I'd be doing that again. So I was brilliant. Thank you, Husqvarna, for giving me the opportunity to do that. And thank you, Norden Expedition, for getting me through it with, I did have one tumble.
Just the one.
Just the one. And it was in deep, soft sand.
Perfect. The perfect place to tumble.
When I knew I was going down, I ejected.
Isn't that, you know, the joy of adventure biking, whether you're riding your first green lane, your first alpine mountain pass, or you're, you know, hooning it through Africa on a new bike? It's that sense of achievement, isn't it? That you come away, that you've achieved something, you've overcome an obstacle, and it's a rewarding feeling, isn't it?
It's why I started the magazine, James. Yeah. I, you know, it's, and the other side of it, the mountaineering side of it for me as well, on the other side of the business, yes, it's having that personal achievement. It's doing something outside of the ordinary. It is so energizing. Yeah. It's, it's why I started the business.
That's it, and that's what we try and get across in Adventure Bike Rider magazine. And your review will be in the May-June issue of Adventure Bike Rider. But you know, that's a joy, isn't it? You're work all week, and at the weekend you can have an adventure, take you out of your comfort zone. So it's amazing. But so we know you had a brilliant time, an epic adventure, but you were there to do a job.
Unfortunately.
And it's not all fun, games, drinking, having fun, whatever. But you know, at the start of a launch, I don't know about yourself, but as you leave that hotel, I tend to have a little bit of a shakedown. The pace is sometimes a little bit slower than it can be later on to give you a chance to get to grips with the bike. Think about your riding position, the screen, the switch gear, the reach to the floor. So can you take us through kind of, you know, that shakedown period and how you found the bike initially, those ergonomics?
Yeah, you're right, James. You get about 20 minutes on a launch before it all goes berserk.
Yep.
And during that time, well, let's talk about first things first. The new suspension, it was brilliant off-road, by the way. But that added suspension made the bike, which was already a reasonably tall bike, it made it that bit taller again. Now, I'm 6'2", and, you know, but I am 6'3", with dodgy legs as well. And, you know, I was okay getting on there, but there were a couple of other gentlemen on the trip who were round about the 5'7", 5'8" mark. They were definitely very, very tippy-toey. You know, it's...
I've got the seat height here, it's 875 to 895 millimetres, which is a tall bike.
Which is quite a height. But the other thing which exaggerates it is the bike has got a very, very narrow waist at the front of the seat. But in short order, it flares out quite a lot. So it makes it even... Or the effect is it makes the bike even taller or harder to get your feet down. The opposite side of the coin is that flaring out of the seat makes that seat very comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, the Norden is an all-day comfortable bike, but it is tall. I would suggest to anybody, you know, have the fit test before you buy it. It is a tall bike. Second thing is, you know, what's the stance like on there? For road riding, the hands, feet, bum position was, yes, just right for me. Off-road riding, I could have done with bar risers, and I would put bar risers on there if I was buying the bike.
So because you were just lent a bit too far forward for comfort?
Yes, Yeah, I was just that little bit too far forward. I was adjusting my position to ride him, but I would have preferred a little. I would have preferred just that little bit more hands up. So bar risers can sort that. Otherwise, the dash. When I look at the dashboard and the all the switch gear now, you know, it's a common thing with on all modern bikes. There's just going to be far more switches than you can get your head around to start with. And the screen, the dash and how you get in the menu and so on. Some of them are difficult. Some of them are very intuitive. But, you know, unless you're a sort of techno Luddite, you're going to get used to it pretty soon. I would say, to sum up the Norden, I would say it's not the easiest to navigate, but it's nowhere near the most difficult. And within a couple of hours, you know what you're doing. The dash, again, there's probably a few, they've probably stuck in a few levels of adjustment where they could have done it with one button. Yep. But, you know, it's no big deal. All in all, I would say the comfort, the controls, spot on. I like them. And that big front screen, just, it makes such a difference.
I was going to come to that, because I ran the standard Norden last year as a long-term bike, and had a lot of good things to say about it, but boy, on the motorway, that screen, which is, I don't know, a few inches tall, just was a nightmare on fast A-roads and motorways. So they really remedied it now.
They have. I'd agree with you on the standard one, because I went out to test some Bridgestone tyres last year in Spain. So actually, I have been on a press launch, but not for a new bike.
Yeah.
And we were lucky to ride numerous different bikes because it was a tyre launch, one of which was the Norden. And I can remember, I was thinking, you know, you'd be better off not having that small screen on. It'd be better off as a naked bike in sort of turbulence and ways. So this new screen was spot on. I was sitting there, you know, and for that first 20 minutes, you can do things like put your end up to test where the wind blow is. You can't do that after 20 minutes.
From an outsider's perspective, it just must look very, very strange with people moving around.
Yeah. So we're all waving at each other, testing where the wind blow is going. And, you know, my shoulders were free of wind blast. And the, you know, if you ride an adventure bike, you invariably have the adventure gear on, which includes a peaked helmet. You know, is the wind catching that peak? No, it was just brushing the top of the helmet. So I had no buffeting, and I had no wind blast. So I was in a very comfortable place there. You know, I was even considering buttering bread on the tank or something. It was
nice,
that
nice to have a snack as you ride.
That's it.
So, you know, you've done your shakedown, 20 minutes or so. You've got a feel for the bike. I think it's fair to say from then on, the pace is often spirited on a bike launch, which, you know, gives you a chance to have a feel for that engine. And that parallel twin engine is pretty sweet, isn't it?
As you know, this parallel twin engine, it's, I think it's 891cc, isn't it?
It's the cc here, which we can take a look at, capacity 889.
889. And it's exactly the same platform as, it's a KTM engine, the LC8 platform, which you'll find in the 890 Adventure and 890R. And, you know, so it's a tried and tested unit to start with. And you've got 105 brake horsepower, if I'm correct, and, you know, that's enough. That's enough for spirited riding, which when we got on to the spirited riding part, it was great. But also, what I really liked about that engine was when we were tootling, you know, the fueling, the just everything about it was nice and gentle. It's the sort of engine where, yes, it's got the power, it's got the let's go side of it, but it's also the character of it is it's not going to spit you off. It's not going to frighten you, scare you as much as some of the other bigger engines. And I find it's just a delight to ride, really. And it's also, you know, you can start using all of the engine, whereas on some of the bigger bikes, you know, if you use the full, let's take Ducati, for example, you use the full extent of the Multistrada and you're going to be in a hedge somewhere.
That's it. Yeah.
This LC8, I liked it because you work it, you use just about the whole of the engine. And on this trip, we did. We had some beautiful mountain roads where Alpine, you know, think of riding some of the best Alpine passes, and you've got them in South Africa. And it was just superb. You know, it was superb to ride that. And then we had a section of private road where we could just unleash the power.
So no speed limits, no police, no nothing.
No. And, wow. You know, we were touching, I think it was around about 200 Ks on that. And
how'd the bike feel at that speed?
Totally, you know, to use a cliche, totally planted.
Yeah.
And, it was just a delight to ride on the road. And both sides of it, when I wanted a spirited ride, the power was there for me. But if we were just going, say, through a town, you know, it was just lovely tootling along as well. You know, the sort of, I could imagine myself putting an arm out of a van at some point.
Buttering your bread. You know,
buttering
that's
my bread.
It. Yeah.
So it was powerful on demand, but nice. Nice and gentle when you wanted to go nice and gentle. So
I've spent a lot of time riding that engine on the KTMs, on the Husqvarna, and sometimes people say, you know, you need an engine over a 1,000cc or something like that to have that gut thump of acceleration, but also with luggage and a pillion. Where I've always found that engine is just usable for pretty much everything. You know, you can carry luggage, you can carry a pillion, and there's just more than enough power there to go forth and explore.
Excellent. Well, you know, I know what your favourite bike was last year, and I think it had that engine, didn't it? So, yeah, I'm with you on that. It is as much as you need the power in that, and the torque is that right way through the range. It's so I've no complaints with that. Absolutely no complaints.
So it's all well and good. We've got a cracking engine inside a bike, but if it doesn't handle well, it's, you know, it's a recipe for disaster. So you mentioned, you know, you're doing 200 Ks on this bike. I imagine the handling was pretty damn good there. or good enough.
Here's the thing. The new suspension comes with a huge amount of travel now, 240 millimeters of travel. And it's adjustable at every point. Everything is adjustable on there. And the stock, it was supplied to us with the stock settings. And there was a couple of observations I made, a couple of things which I think we all pointed out on there. First thing was, on the road, with the minimal amount of brake touch, there was a noticeable dive on the front end, quite a big dive on the front end. But I have to back that up by saying at no point did it concern me or affect the handling performance of the bike. There was just this substantial front dive. Until the progressive part of the suspension kicked in. I would certainly want something done with that if I was buying this bike, and I'd probably have, I don't know, the compression or preload adjusted to get it right. The second thing was, and I'm going to move off-road a little bit now because we're on suspension, I had a couple of violent head shakes when we were riding off-road. And so did just about everybody else on the trip. But the conditions we had them were all exactly the same. It was, we were riding about 70 miles per hour on corrugated gravel roads. So there was a huge amount of movement in that long suspension. And at some, you know, at two points of the morning, I had really violent head shakes on there. They corrected quite quickly. But geez, when one of those happens, it's
70 miles an hour off road, that's heart in the mouth time, isn't it?
It is. Just about everybody reported this, and everybody was saying 70 mile an hour corrugated potholed conditions. It was solved by putting two clicks on the compression, and I think it was one click on the preload. And it solved it. So, but yeah, other than that, the handling on road, superb.
Because you've got a big 21-inch front wheel at the front, haven't you? 18 at the rear. It's you know, an off-road bias setup, but on the road, it did well, didn't it?
On the road, it was, you know, we were riding alpine conditions at a very fast pace, and you know, not once did the bike lose line, did it threaten to go out of shape or anything. It's the handling was great, and very at the same time, it was a very comfortable place to be. Straight line stability as well, even with that big suspension, spot on. Like I say, the only niggle, and it would be a niggle rather than anything to concern me, would have been the level of that front dive, even at light brake touching. Yeah. But I'm sure that can be dialed out with the suspension settings.
And I guess it's one of these things about these adventure bikes, you know, they're designed like the Husky to do everything, to go through some pretty arduous off-road riding. But also here in the UK, you know, the first to admit that most of these bikes will spend the majority of their life on the road, touring, things like that. So, you know, I think when you've got that level of suspension travel, that level of off-road performance, you do need to sometimes take a look at the suspension. You need to look at the bike and set it up for you, which in a way that you might not need to with a road-focused bike, will you?
Well, when you think about it, James, the you know, a lot of the top spec bikes coming out now, they've got a little button you press on the handlebars, which changes the suspension for you. You know, so adjusting the Norden the old manual way is no different to that. So, you know, top spec bikes are coming with adjustable suspension. It's just you press a button on the Norden, you've got to turn a dial.
See, I'm waiting for the day where you put your weight in on a bike like the Multistrada and it adjusts it for you. But I'm not looking forward to the day where I have to turn around and ask my wife what her weight is when she's on the pillion seat to adjust. So perhaps we won't get there quite yet. But so you mentioned it performed well on the road. And these bikes will be used for road touring as well as off-road use. What was, you know, the ride quality and the comfort like over distance, you know, as you're sat covering big miles on the road?
I've got not just South Africa, there was Spain last year, what we've done big miles as well on the Norden. The Spanish one was a bit different because I had the low screen. But, you know, I think one of the acid tests to comfort, especially on a launch when you're doing longer mileage, is when do the leg stretches start appearing?
Yep.
And, you know, because you've got up to 8 riders or 10 riders in a group. And, you know, after a couple of hours, you tend to see people stretching their legs or standing up just when there's no reason to stand up. And that's a good test of, you know, are people comfortable on these bikes? Are they, you know, I didn't see any of that in the Norn. I didn't see any of that at all. And I didn't feel the need to do that. It was a very, very comfortable place to be. And I'd say, similarly in Spain, when I rode it in Spain, which was a lot more sort of on-road mileage as well. And let's say, for example, I was thinking of going down to, I don't know, south of France tomorrow. And I was going to take the scenic route through the Alps. So I'd have a fast blast across France, down the motorway, and then up and over the Alps. I can't think of a reason why I wouldn't take the Norden for that. It's a very comfortable bike, you know. I would say the RT, BMW RT, beats it, and the Goldwing probably beats it. But within that sector of adventure bikes, yeah, it was very comfortable, you know. I can't think of another bike where I'm sort of saying, "Oh, that was a lot more comfortable." It's there. It's at the top end of the comfort zones for adventure bikes.
And you mentioned earlier a little bit of fork dive, but it actually makes me think of what were the brakes like? You know, were they did they perform well? Because they would have been put to a very, very stern test.
They were, and you know, I'm not as attuned. You know, I've been on some of these tests, and I'm sure you have, James, where there's been 7 of us, and the other 6 were TT racers, and then there's me. It was a pretty similar setup on this one. And, you know, some of these guys are so attuned to my, you know, it's like, you know, we've got Dan in this room with us. Dan's our video man who is... So, you know, if there's a minute change in sound, Dan picks it up. Me and you don't.
Tells Dan us off. But
it's very similar on these tests. You know, I'm your average rider. I'm your average 63-year-old rider with dodgy knees and so on, right? So you know, when people say, oh, the brakes didn't bite as hard as whatever, you know, there was a little bit of that on there. But I found the brakes perfect. You know, I'm not sort of tuned in to this final 2% of braking ability, which doesn't make any difference to anybody who's going from Birmingham to Grimsby, for example. You know, so the brakes, I found them spot on.
Single finger, two finger braking.
Yes, and yep. in fact, if I can move off road again, there was one section of the off road where we was coming down a very steep drop, and there was a couple of rock steps where, you know, the bash plate or the skid plate was hiding coming down there, so it was done at a slow pace because there was big rocks, boulders, and so on. And I remember coming, bearing in mind I hadn't ridden off road for over three years at this stage, and I was coming down, and I had one finger on the brake, and I had one finger on the clutch, and, you know, I was doing just in control of the brake, clutch, movement, and so on. And I was thinking, wow, this is very competent. So, yes, you know, I'm totally in tune with the brakes and one finger pull. Some of the other guys were saying you had to use two or three, but, you know, they're only 5'7" and about 9 stone, you know. So, yes, you know, I found them spot on for working like that. And for anybody who's going to, you know, if you're not a TT rider, these brakes are fine. You know, if you're going to ride in the TTs and margins, and, you know, but who's going to ride a Norton in the TT? They're fine. They're great.
That's one thing that helps, you know, average riders. I always class myself as a very average rider as well. Is, you know, technology on motorbikes these days. And adventure bikes, you know, they're often premium machines. They come packed, filled with a lot of tech. Now, I know the Husqvarna's got four rider modes, traction control, cornering ABS, all that sort of thing. You know, on the road, how did all that technology kind of work together?
It's, I'm a great lover of the technology. I really am. Any sort of technology that helps me enjoy my riding more, I'm a great lover of. And the engine modes and the different riding modes, I should say, then, yeah, I'm a great fan of those because it stops a lot of faff, you know, especially if you're going on road, off road, and you can just press a button to get the different settings. I'm a great fan of that. And the Norton comes with, or the Norton Expedition comes with four modes. The standard Norton comes with straight, rain, off-road, and I think you can retrofit the Expedition mode, yep, or the Explorer.
There we go.
Explore mode if you want, but the Norton Expedition comes with the Explore. Straight, you've got, as you'd expect, you've got a sharp throttle response, you've got traction control and ABS dialed in. It's also lean sensitive on when you're on street mode, and they're all dialed in for riding on dry tarmac, you know, and they work great. The rain mode, the power softened down. I think it goes down to 85 brake horsepower on rain mode, plus the traction control change, you know. So. And that was, we didn't get to test that in South Africa.
No? Oh, what a shame.
I put it on, but there was no rain. The off-road mode, which I did use, that gives you a bit more wheel spin on the traction control, which is nice, yep, because, you know, it just allows you to get that little bit of the hero spin on. And The power is down again. You don't have the full 105 brake horsepower, and everything's dialed in for that. The other thing is the ABS is turned off at the back when you're on off-road mode, which I actually prefer.
Yeah.
You know, I quite like ABS on the front brake, but on the back brake, I'm old-fashioned. I'm old-school on the back brake. I like to press the brake, and if I want to slide, I can slide, and I want control over that. So, because sometimes sliding the back end is your control.
Yeah, and it helps you get downhill. It helps you, yeah.
Yeah, so, and then the Explorer mode allows you, you know, you can tinker with it till the cows come home.
It's, call it the Big Daddy mode. That's what it should be.
Yeah, so you could have sort of full maximum power And then you can dial in anything between 1 and 9 settings for traction control and so on and so on. So it allows you to, you know, it allows you to tailor that bike and the performance of it to suit your riding skills and level. It's noticeable the difference between the modes as well. And I didn't dial in different things on the Explorer mode. I was too concerned with staying on the bike.
Fair play.
With the, on the off-road side. But the off-road one, like I say, I've done over 300 kilometers of, in some instances, very tough, very gnarly off-road. And in other instances, very fast-paced gravel dirt roads. And it suited me very good. You know, the whole setup was just right for me. Apart from, say, bar raisers and when we adjusted the preload and the damping.
Yeah. So we've touched on the off-road a fair bit. And I think out of a lot of the adventure bikes out there, which, as I said, in the UK, a lot of adventure bikes spend most of the time on the road. Nothing wrong with that. Plenty of adventure to be had on the blacktop. But if you're looking for an adventure bike that you want to take down a few green lanes, you know, the Husqvarna is going to be on your list, isn't it? So how did it feel, you know, when you're navigating this terrain that you're thinking, can I get up there? You know, is the biggest compliment you can pay to it that you didn't notice the bike when you were trying to look at this trail and pick your line and try and get up there? You know, did it feel poised? Did it feel well balanced?
Yes, massively so. It's a testament to Husqvarna and the Norden Expedition that some of the trails we took it over and we got up them, down them, through them, you know. There was even a water crossing. They said, we're going to do a river crossing, you know. When we got there, it wasn't a river, it was a lake.
Well, I've seen the video and it looks like a lake. Yeah.
And, you know, the weird bow waves. You don't get to do this on adventure bike launches. So, you know, it floats very well. There's one aspect for you. But, yeah, the balance of it, I got my mojo back on that. I wasn't fighting with the bike. The bike was working with me. I really didn't feel that any part of that bike off-road was working against me. It was all working with me, and that's the off-road mode, the suspension, because, you know, we weren't doing every part of the off-road at 70 mile an hour. Where there was more gnarly, trickier parts, that longer suspension was excellent. You know, that extra ground clearance you had, although we were, you know, if I'd been on the standard bike, I would have probably been, you know, still balancing on a rock there, so pivoting backwards and forwards now. So, it's, you know, for a 220, you know, kgs of bike, with 900 cc's of power there, it was amazing what we were doing. And it was amazing the confidence that bike gave me to look at some of these climbs, you know, especially in the physical condition I'm in, and sort of think, you can do this. You and the Norden can do this.
And that's such that's such an important trait for a bike if you are thinking of riding it on some trails. Because what we always say is our talent's going to run out well before the capability of any bike. But you look at a GS Adventure, you look at a KTM 1290 Super Adventure R, you know, these, they're very, very capable off-road, but boy, they can be intimidating.
Yes.
So do you think, you know, that Husqvarna, for someone who wants an adventure bike, they don't want to go down the trail bike route, but they want to start tackling a few green lanes and get into adventure biking. Perhaps they want to ride the trail, the Adventure Bike Rider Festival, which is 20 kilometers of glorious off-road route. You know, would the Husqvarna serve those people well?
Yes, no doubt. No doubt in my mind it would. It's you're right. All these bikes, you know, our talent runs out before the capability of the bikes run out. But the Norden isn't, you know, it's a big bike, but it doesn't have that gigantic feel that some of the more modern bikes do now. It does feel a bit more compact when you're on there, and so you don't feel as if you're steering, you know, a super tanker or something. It's more of a clipper rather than a super tanker.
It floats, so there you go.
But it'd be a great bike. Coming back to that, I'd rather ride your Norden or off-road, by the way, because any big bike, if you know, here's another thing. If you're going to ride off-road, you know, expect to drop your bike at some stage. There was one rider on our group who came off 10 times.
Wow.
And this guy is a good rider, and he came off 10 times. There was a couple of scratches on the bike. There was no substantial damage. You know, amazing. That bike really does sort of fall well. And, you know, I come off in soft sand, so no problem at all, not even a scratch on there. But yes, one rider came off in double figures, and the bike, you know, there's no damage.
There's good protection on it, isn't there? Because you've got that pretty sturdy looking bash plate. I know the Norden, like the KTM 890 Adventure, has the fuel tanks kind of slung low down the side.
Yes.
And I was talking to the guys at Sweet Lamb, the KTM off-road school, and they say they get dropped a lot. And those fuel tanks didn't have crash bars on.
Yeah.
But that plastic has been tested to such a high extent that it can withstand a huge amount of impact.
We were amazed. Yeah. We were amazed at the amount of, you know, sort of people coming off on this trip, and none of the bikes were, not one bike was seriously damaged. And the other thing, those fuel tanks coming down low, of course, and as you know, just adds to, it lowers the center of gravity. It makes a big difference to, you know, some of the adventure bikes, without naming names, you know, they carry their fuel very high, and, you know, you've got this big pendulum which you ride in there, whereas just keeping that weight down lower makes a huge difference. It makes more difference than people realize until they start riding and you know, balancing and steering with your legs, which you're doing mostly off-road as well. And just getting that weight moving, you know, it's more subtle weight movements rather than feeling the weight movements. So, yeah, you know, it crashes well.
It does. Yeah, I always like seeing the really good guys crashing. Two reasons. One, makes me feel better about myself. That, you know, I'm tackling this same terrain and not coming off. But I always see it as kind of a plus point for a bike in that, you know, Dakar riders or so, for anyone, if they're really pushing a bike hard, coming off, having a load of fun, pushing their skill level, which is already really high. For me, that shows that the bike's a lot of fun to play with and they're really giving it a good go and they're not having to be cautious.
No. And when you go on a press launch, there's usually some of the top riders in the world, whether that's road riders or off-road riders. So, you know, like I say, I test this as a 63-year-old, overweight, with dodgy knees, and then you've got Cyril Dupree, you know, 5 times Dakar winner, and then you see him handling it, and you just think, geez, it works all right for the 63-year-old old guy, but you know, it also works very well for this younger, fitter Dakar champion. And that's great to see that because, you know, I know that I can push the bike a lot more than what I am doing when I see what he's doing. So it always comes back to we're limited by our own ability. These bikes will do it. But, you know, saying that, James, you've said for the average UK and probably European buyer, these bikes are going to be ridden on road more than, you know, 90% of the time. Probably, you know, maybe more than 90% of the time. The good thing I can report on that is it's wonderfully comfortable on road, and it's great fun on road. But if you do get to the point where there's a forestry trail, for example, or, you know, Spain has got plenty of the dusty, gravelly roads, and some of the military roads in the Alps as well. You know, this is the bike you want to be there on if you're going on a big bike. And I'm trying to think of that forest trail up in
the Forest Drive.
Yeah, beautiful
spot, isn't it? Yeah.
This would be the sort of big adventure bike where you could ride down to the Alps and then you could see a military road, and you could think, I'm gonna have a crack at that, and the bike is very capable of doing it.
What was the soft luggage like on the back? Because that comes included with the bike now, these two bags on the back that very much, they look adventure-focused luggage to me.
I totally get soft luggage. You know, it's especially if you've fallen off 10 times in one day, yep. what you don't want is a big hard.
Your cases aren't going to survive, are they?
No, your cases aren't going to survive, and also the chances of you catching those cases, catching your leg, if you've fallen off that, is quite high. So I get soft luggage, why people would use it, certainly on those types of the trails we were riding in South Africa. But I would always, you know, for 99% of my riding, I want hard luggage. But the soft luggage which is fitted on there is designed for a purpose, and that purpose is, you know, if you're riding through the bush or if you're going to fall, it's, you know, that's what it's designed for. They're 18 litres in, they're waterproof, and they're 18 litres in size, so you wouldn't want to be taking a pillion with you and sharing those bags.
I would be short on space. Should be all right, but I'd be short on space.
But part of this trip as well, which I haven't mentioned, was Husqvarna want to turn it into a real adventure. And by real adventure, they wanted us to pack all our camping gear into the soft luggage for the day's riding. And we were camping out in the night as well. So this was really hardcore glamping. Yeah.
So, I mean, are we talking like yurts or safari tents here rather than one man tents?
No, we're not talking one man tents. We were talking tents I could stand up in and switch the light off.
Very nice.
But but it meant our soft luggage was packed. We were riding these hardcore gnarly trails with our luggage fully packed. You know, as you would if you were going on an adventure.
Yeah.
And like I say, then it was hardcore glamping in the African bush where there was ostriches wandering in, zebras.
That is very cool.
And we had, as you do in South Africa, then we had a braai. A braai, for anybody who doesn't know the South African lingo, is a barbecue. Oh,
that was good.
And there was something like 300 lamb chops cooked on it.
How many people were there?
Fortunately for me, there were 300. Yeah. So and I love lamb chops. So awesome. It was a great day. It was a great hardcore adventure camping in the wilderness with lamb chops.
It sounds like the perfect end to a tough day. And I think that was deserved, about it.
It was fantastic. They looked after us very well.
Just a note on the luggage. Last year, I had the long-term Norden as a test bike at ABR, and I had the solid plastic cases. Right. And I'm assuming you'll be able to get the same cases for the expedition this year. And they were great. You know, they slipped on and off. You didn't need to buy an extra frame or anything like that. So if you are looking for road touring kit, you know, the luggage options are there.
Right. Okay. Well, I didn't know that. So the frame was the same as you had on.
Yeah, it's like it's part of the grab rails or something like that. They just slide on and off. So these are the plastic cases, not your aluminium and Charlie style. But you know, they were great. Lots of room. Lasted the year of me using and abusing them. So they did a good job.
Good to hear.
All right, Alan, I'm going to put you on the spot now.
All right.
I'd like to know your three main takeaways from the Norden launch. And from the Norden, you can combine the launch experience with the bike.
Okay, the first experience was just the whole South Africa bit. Going to South Africa, riding 500 kilometers plus and over 300 kilometers that off road. You know, that's what an adventure bike is designed for. Even though we might not do that in the UK, that's what they're designed for. That's how they sold. You can go anywhere, do anything. So that's my first takeaway, is the location and the actual content of the launch. The second one was, you know, how genuinely overall competent that the Norden is in both on-road. It's the unicorn in a way. It's comfortable on-road, but massively capable off-road. And, you know, I can say massively capable off-road because... there is no doubt in my mind that the conditions we rode on this trip were far more challenging than any press trip I've been on since we started ABR. It was, I wouldn't have thought a manufacturer would have set something as difficult and as challenging as this. So that's the second takeaway. You know, we tested these bikes in very gnarly conditions. And the third takeaway, could I mention lamb chops for a third takeaway?
You can mention anything you want.
Oh, let's talk about 300 lamb chops.
How many did you end up having?
I think I had about seven. But well, they were quite thin.
You know? So, that's good work.
But I think the other, I think sticking with the bike, I think the other thing to take away is, at 13,500 pounds, give or take, and you're getting this extra, everything is upgraded on there, it's looking pretty good value. You know, the Norden Expedition is looking good value today. So those are the three things. What an awesome location and testing ground. What a great bike that stood up to everything thrown at it. And thirdly, it's good value.
Yeah.
So, I come back with a smile on my face, James. And like I say, that's probably the biggest endorsement you can give a bike.
Well, it is, because, you ride, even though you haven't done a launch for a little while, you ride a lot of bikes.
Yes.
So to have a bike really energize and enthuse you is great to see, and it must be testament to the riding experience and the bike.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for sharing your experiences on the launch. Remember, your review will appear in the May, June issue of Adventure Bike Rider magazine. So,
And if I can just say as well, it looks, I'm pretty sure that Husky are bringing quite a few Norden Expeditions to the ABR Festival.
Fantastic.
And, if they do so, then they're going to be there for people coming to the festival to have a test ride on.
And we've got a really good place to test, haven't we?
Oh, we have. We got the perfect place. Perfect place in where else in the UK can you ride for 20-odd miles off-road? It's perfect for testing it.
That's it. And if people haven't got their tickets for the ABR Festival yet, don't hang around, because it sells out every year, every single year, and it's on course to do the same. Where can they get their tickets?
They're only available online, and it's at abrfestival.com. And look forward to seeing you there if you can. Cheers, James.
Good stuff. Thanks for your time, Alan.
Thank you.